Hey, welcome, friends who dig cars and automotive stuff. You've tuned into yet another...
another gruntled episode of V8 Radio, Kevin.
Not disgruntled?
Correctamundo, not disgruntled, but gruntled.
If disgruntled generally means, like, unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
Does gruntled mean happy?
Means pleased, satisfied, and contented.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
I hope they use that more.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm very gruntled to see you.
Feeling extremely gruntled today. I just want everyone to know.
Right. Sunshine and gruntles for all. This is the V8 Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Oostie, joined, as always, by our esteemed co-host, Mr. Mike Cuball Clark, who is gruntled to be here today.
Every day. I'm gruntled to be here every day.
That's right. That's right. Well, to our devoted listeners all the way around the world who have come to expect a certain level of nonsense from this show. You know, they maintain their low expectations, and we almost deliver every time. We start this show with a trivia question in which we pose the question at the beginning of the show. It's automotive related to a degree, and then at the end we reveal the answers, and then everybody can sleep at night. It's kind of how I look at this.
Agreed.
It's a valuable service to the world.
Oh, good Lord.
I'm losing it. Well, have you prepared a trivia question,
Mr. Cuball? I have prepared a trivia question, Senor Oostie. Okay, right. Here we go.
What do you got?
Not much, but we're going to let it loose here. So you've no doubt... you know, you've seen and heard of the Chrysler Turbin car from 60, that was produced in 63 and 64, I believe.
Yes.
It was at on display at the McCacken show a couple of years ago. It was beautiful. Mm-hmm. I think it was the year that you were in Saudi Arabia, actually.
It was, correct.
Yeah. So what, everybody refers to it as the Chrysler Turbin car, but what was the official name of the Chrysler Turbin car?
Tim, I think.
Tim? Final answer?
That's a great question. Because if I'm not mistaken, it was a Chrysler product name that had been used before, I think. For example, today we have the Mustang Mach-E for the electric SUV Stang. I think the Turbin car was like, I don't want to say it was a Newport, you know, Turbin or something, but I think it was an existing name, and it was like a brand extension of that name. So I don't know, you know, it was a Chrysler, right? So I don't think it was a 300. But I'm drawing a blank. You know, I've got a second removed personal connection to that car in a weird way.
Tell me.
Yeah. So in 1964, there was a giant publicity campaign in which they drove the Turbin cars across the United States. And they set up visitations and viewings in different cities along the way. And people got to come out and see it and experience the car. And have you've seen one of those run before?
I have not seen one of those run.
It is very different because the turbine engine, as you know, it's just like a jet.
Sure.
On an airplane.
Jet turbine engine.
There's no reciprocating up and down assembly. There's no combustion events that you can notice. So it doesn't have an idle that, you know, is rumpy like a V8 or anything. It's got a whoosh, you know. And when this thing gets moving, you give it the throttle, and the RPM of this goes up to like 20, 30,000. And then it's got like a slipper clutch. It's almost like a torque converter, and it just starts moving. Right. So there's no, it's very different the way it just kind of goes, and then it's going down the road, you know, and people there, you know, that's why they put them in front of people, because they were trying to gauge if this was like acceptable automotive behavior.
Sure.
If people would be okay with this super high RPM, because I think the thing revved to 100,000.
Oh my gosh.
That's full high. Song. It was. So if you want to experience a little bit of that, you can jump on Jay Leno's garage, because I think he did a drive with one, and it might have been his. I think he's got one.
I think he does too.
Yeah, a few of them got let out. But anyway, in that cross-country publicity deal, the Chrysler Turbine car, driven by one of the, I don't want to say executives, but one of the people that were assigned, maybe from the ad agency or whatever, to drive this thing, happened to drive through my hometown of Park Ridge, Illinois.
Really?
Yes. And guess whose old man wrote him a speeding ticket?
Shut your mouth. Yeah. Get out of here.
Yeah. I don't care who you are or what this thing is. You're speeding.
Nice. Yeah. Big Al. Not taking it from anybody.
Nope. And if I remember the story correctly, he did get a little bit of Hollywood attitude from the driver of this thing.
You know? I'm sure.
You can't write me. It's a turbine car. It's above the law. But today, as I tell the story, a few of the pieces are starting to come together in my mind, because back in those days, my dad would buy a new car every 2 years. Uh-huh. Did it in 1960, did it in 62, he did it in 64. He got married in 65, and then that
stopped that, huh?
It was time to buy a house and, you know, all the rest of it. But so 62, he bought a brand new Ford Galaxy 500 XL that he turned out to be his favorite car he ever owned, which is why I have this one here today.
Cool.
64, he traded the Galaxy for a Dodge, and he didn't really like that car.
Really?
And it was almost, if not the same color as the Turbine cars.
Really?
That coppery, kind of
root beer color?
Yeah, I think his is a little bit rosier. Mm. So perhaps, what do they call these microaggressions?
You're so woke, baby. So woke.
My dad might have been exercising some microaggressions towards the Chrysler Corporation themselves, expressing disinterest in his own vehicle.
Oh, my goodness. That's awesome.
By peeing on their parade.
Yep.
I never thought about that until right now.
Oh, man. That's a great story.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. My mom, I think on my Facebook page, I have a picture from my parents' wedding, and that 64 Dodge was in the wedding. And you can see the color, and they were in the backseat. It was a pretty neat car. I think, I don't know if it was a Polara, you know, just a sedan.
Right.
Nothing fancy. Not as fancy as his Galaxy. Uh-huh. But, so, what was the question? What do they call that thing? I don't know.
What was the official name of the Chrysler Turbine car?
I'm going to go for a 0.25% right and say, all I know is that I think it was an existing Chrysler name.
Okay.
But because I need to throw out a wag, I will say they called it the Jetosonic.
Jetosonic.
Which is not what it was. But it sounds fun.
Oh, I wish it. I hope it is.
Mm-hmm. I bet.
Jetosonic. All right, my man. Duly noted.
Okay.
Yeah. What do you got for me?
Well, guess what? We've got a new twist on our trivia question today for you, Mr. Q-Ball.
Snap. Or do I have to answer it in the form of a question?
No, but maybe. You could, I guess. Right. We could throw that in there, too, and have two twists. Mm. You know, it'd be like a big pretzel.
Right on.
So, you remember the Choose Your Own Adventure books?
I do remember those.
Where, you know, you got to pick the different ending. Mm-hmm. Well, today you can play Choose Your Own Trivia Question.
Oh, great.
I've got four to choose from.
Come on.
Yeah. And all you got to do is spin the wheel and tell me a number 1 through 4, and that's the corresponding question you will get.
All right. Let's go with number 1.
You go straight to
number one.
Yeah, I see that, number one. If you have two of them, you can stick your number ones.
Number ones.
And stick them somewhere and walk on your elbows.
Right.
Okay, you asked for it. And if you answer this in the form of a question, it's a quarter point right also.
Mm.
You'll wipe my slate clean.
Dig it.
All right. I think you know this. This is an easy one. In Buick nomenclature, why was the car called an Electra 225?
Ooh, that is a great question. The Electra 225 mm-hmm. from Buick, a very, very big car.
Which is also referred to as the deuce and change, yeah. or deuce and a quarter.
Deuce and a quarter, yeah, right. Yeah. All right, well, Kevin, simply put, the 225 is the number of inches long from bumper to bumper that that car is. 225 inches.
Number of inches long. Very interesting. And he says this with confidence.
I feel confident. However, I've been confident in the past, and I've been so wrong.
Right. So, I don't remember. Was that in the form of a question?
What's 225 inches long?
Well, let me tell you. Okay, that's your final answer.
Yes, sir.
All right. We will. It's duly noted, and we will find out later.
Groovy, man. Groovy.
Yeah. All right. So, in the continuing saga of the GTO, last time you heard Mike say, it's in the hole, but this time...
Holy cow, I actually got to drive it.
That's insane. That is so awesome. So, yeah. You shared with me a little video of the car actually moving on its own power. And I remember we were talking before about how you needed to... do an 11th hour carb rebuild to get it to start and run.
Yes.
And then you had some loose ends to tie up before driving. So what were you tying up?
We were, let me see here. I brought over my vacuum advance line that I ordered that came in. We had to make a call on some leaks. We tightened up the valve covers. They were leaking. They're better, but they're still leaking a little bit.
With the new gaskets, or you just tighten them down?
Just tighten them down. I got some new gaskets for it, and because we didn't put any sealer on them or glue them on the valve.
Oh, you put them in dry cork, and they weren't going to leak.
Yeah.
Well, All right.
Live and learn, man.
So, well, I believe the Felpro instructions do say. Install the cork gaskets dry with the blue stripe up,
Oh, do they?
And I don't know why they say that, okay. Because I've never been able to get them to seal that way. So, yeah, you got to glue the tar out of them and get the rubber ones. So,
yeah. So, we got a leaking less, so it was manageable. We had to make sure that the transmission wasn't going to leak, and it didn't, amazingly enough. That's one thing that's not leaking. And then we had to look at the rear brakes. We were bleeding the rear brakes and discovered that the rear wheel cylinders aren't working so great. So I ordered a set of those. But the fronts were still grabbing enough to slow the car down. So as long as you're not going crazy and, trying to go into traffic or anything like that. Where Randy lives, it's pretty rural. It's pretty wide open. You've seen it. So... We just drove it down the street, a couple streets, and then came back, and it was cool. I mean, the car needs some tuning. I gotta, make sure I time it better. The carb needs a little adjusting.
Mm-hmm.
There's some tweaks to do.
Finish
fixing the brakes. Yeah, the wheel cylinders are on the way. They should have been here today, but they'll be here tomorrow. So,
now, have you done wheel cylinders on that car before in the back?
No, I have not.
So there's a potential that this could be a little bit of a rusty headache back there.
Well, we looked back there. The bleeder screw came loose fine. It doesn't look bad. I've replaced the shoes on the brake hardware in the past, just not the wheel cylinders.
Yeah.
So it's not too terrible back there, believe it or not.
I'd be prepared for that nut on the hard line to maybe be kind of stuck.
I gotcha.
Spray some, call Randy and have him spray some stuff on there now.
Not a bad idea.
Let him soak. I had to do that on my Riv when I replaced all the wheel cylinders at once. And they didn't look that happy, but they all cracked loose real easy. So hopefully I get lucky with them.
I hope so too. I need a little luck.
Then the whole brake thing was because you had to put some new lines in front, which meant open the system and bleed it out.
Yes. And the rears needed to be adjusted anyway. I mean, the drums were just sliding on and off, like they weren't touching anything. So they need some adjustments. So if I get those brakes done, also there's some cooling system leaks. The freeze plugs in the heads, on the front and back are weeping just a little bit. I did get some ceramic engine sealer, that came in today that we're going to use to try to seal that up.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can get the valve covers not leaking, the coolant not leak, and the brakes to where they feel safe, then I can drive this baby home.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
Yeah. I'm at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I think just kind of going over this in my mind, you bought a new throttle cable. So that geometry's figured out.
That is beautiful.
Good. And you did mention in a text to me that you've got a potential drive shaft length issue.
Correct. Yeah, the drive shaft, and I don't know why.
I was going to say, what happened?
Well, I don't know. It's always been a little short. It's always been kind of not engaged as deep as it should be in the rear of the transmission. But that's the way it's always been, for about 20,000 miles. I believe it's the original drive shaft, but it's like a two-step drive shaft. It's like a tube within a tube.
Is it a rubber ring?
Yeah.
Vulcanizing it on there?
Yes.
Okay. That might be your...
Yeah. So maybe it slipped.
Yes.
Yeah. And we were trying to kind of knock it out, but we couldn't get it to come out anymore.
I don't know that you will.
Yeah.
Because those are, you know, vulcanized and then time welded. But, you know, at some point, I don't know that a drive shaft is going to receive trauma to impact it, to shorten it and telescope inward.
Right.
Unless it hits the trans case.
Mm-hmm.
And you would know that, you know.
Yes.
or if the car got... Did that thing ever get wrecked? It doesn't look like it got wrecked or high-sided or anything.
No, I don't think so.
And that's an original 400 car with the turbo 400.
Yes.
So maybe the previous guy blew a U-joint and it's a six-cylinder drive shaft or something.
Maybe.
You know, I mean, in 1974.
Anything is possible with this thing. You know, the way it was found in a field... completely stripped. I mean, there was no drivetrain in it, so maybe he just got the wrong one.
There you go.
Initially, when it was first put back together.
Yeah, maybe it's from a 65.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Those are shorter, right? Maybe it was the horse that did the other damage.
Maybe. Maybe. Stinking horses.
If you want to know that story,
yeah,
I don't remember what episode number it is. You can go back and find the story of Mike telling us about the horse damage.
Yep.
On the side of the GTO in the back.
That's legit.
Yeah, I've seen it. So you're having a new one made?
Yeah, I haven't pulled the trigger. We got to verify the measurement. We think it's 59.5, but not 100% sure.
Have you downloaded the sheets from Denny's Driveline or any of the drive shaft companies that sell them? They all have an online, they got an online form.
Oh yeah.
And it tells you how to measure the shaft. And there's very little difference, but each one of these sheets from each one of these drive shaft companies, Inland Empire Drive Shaft, I think has one too. They give you specific directions that they want. So what we've done in the past is download their form, fill it out the way they like it. Right. And then you send the form and the shaft to them to have it lengthened or whatever, or a new one made. But we actually have a pretty good drive shaft shop locally. So we've used that form from a different place, but bring it with so that the new drive shaft shop understands how they landed on those measurements.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Right. It's not just numbers on a paper. It's a diagram, and it shows you, you know, you,
okay,
from the end of the transmission to the front of the, you know, rear end yoke, it's X, and you fill in the number and all that stuff. But even saying that, we have gotten drive shafts that were too short. Filling them
that's a bummer.
As accurately as, you know, as possible, we thought. So, but hopefully you don't have that problem.
I hope so too. Yeah.
But I would reference some of those sheets before you land on your final answer for the dimensions.
That's a good idea. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we did feel just the teensiest bit of play in the tail shaft bushing as well. Mm-hmm. So that's going to get replaced as well.
Good.
When the new drive shaft comes in, just to make sure it's all fresh. A new rear seal. Yeah, because
that can wobble and leak.
Yeah. Yeah. But so, knock on wood, so far, that isn't where it used to leak. It used to leak at the torque converter. But that has stopped, which is beautiful.
Yep, that's good.
Yeah,
you don't have to take it out again.
Correct. I don't want to.
No, I don't blame you.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I'm right there.
All right, now, how about does it charge?
Yes, we check the alternator voltage. It's like 14 and a half.
Perfect.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, good. And your cooling system. What radiator is in that thing?
A Griffin aluminum radiator.
That's right. And you've got a clutch fan, or is it an electric?
Clutch fan.
Yeah. Yeah. So you drove this thing down Randy's driveway, down to the end of the road and back.
Yes.
And you've let it idle for a while.
Yes.
I'm trying to figure out a way to have you do a few test laps before you make the hour-long drive home.
Mm. Well, I'm curious to see how it's going to behave, how the temperature is going to behave with a hood on it.
Well,
right,
that's
now
just
there's no hood. Yeah. And
so you're going to have several factors. You're going to have the hood. We're experiencing a bit of a heat wave these days.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be 100 degrees here on Friday.
Nice.
Then the clutch, the fan clutch, is it fresh? Does it work?
Yeah, it works great. Yeah, when I turn the car off after it's warm, that fan stops. It's coupling nicely. Okay. It's not freewheeling like crazy, like a worn out clutch would.
Good, good. Yeah, so there's, you know, different levels of fan clutches, and to take a little bit of a left turn, I just went through a fan clutch experience this past week with the Galaxy.
Right.
And the car had a very new, we put them on last year, a new set of electric fans that worked fine, but they were just very loud and uncharacteristic for this car. It just,
yes.
You look at this 60s convertible and you don't expect to hear. You close your eyes. Yeah. You close your eyes and you hear like a Volkswagen Jetta or something, you know, it didn't match.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, you know what? This is a lot of obviously Ford parts in this thing, but I know the lineage of the engine and a lot of these parts are interchangeable. So it's a 351 and the water pump's reverse rotation. It's very similar to what you would find in like a 92 F-150. 5.8 liter.
Yeah.
So I thought, I'm going to put a clutch fan back on this thing because they're quiet and, you know, generally work. And my concern was that I'm going to have to build a fan shroud because my engine did not come in this car. It's been retrofitted in. These right. things never came with a 351. So I don't know where it is front to back lengthwise.
Oh, right.
So I don't think a stock fan shroud would work. Plus there's the left and right orientation. The fan won't be centered
mm-hmm.
and up, down, you know, every dimension could be different from original. So
sure.
I thought, well, step one is just get the clutch and get the fan and see what happens.
Yeah, right on.
So there was three different fan clutch options. There was a standard, a heavy duty and a severe duty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the difference between those? There's another trivia question.
I don't. Maybe the temperature at which it couples?
I think the temperature is the same, uh-huh. but it's the grab of the clutch. So like okay. the severe duty ones, the fan ends up spinning at like 95% of engine RPM.
Okay.
But the lesser ones, I think a standard duty is only like 75%.
Hmm. Okay.
But they're smaller and they're lighter. And they're so that turns into less wear on the water pump shaft bearing
mm-hmm.
and all that kind of stuff. So, but I thought, you know, this car doesn't see daily use. I'm going to get the heavy duty one. I'm going to get the severe duty one. Why cool. not?
Yeah.
And it turns out that because the F-250 is very popular, the cross references, that fan clutch comes on 258 different vehicles.
Oh my word. That's so awesome.
It's on the shelf at my local parts store. So that was a win.
That's great.
And then for the fan blade itself, I ended up going with a 90 Fox Body 5.0 Mustang okay. fan. And I remember doing an electric fan conversion on one of those a long time ago, but thinking the stock fan is kind of interesting looking, but the guy who wanted the electric didn't want the parasitic draw of the belt turning the clutch, which electric fans don't do, right? In my case, right. I don't care. It's not a race car. I don't really care. Makes right. plenty of power. So I got one of those fans, which attached right to that clutch, put the whole thing in the car, and it fits like it was designed.
Mm.
I was like, wow, did I get lucky there? So the fan, the vertical height is perfect. The fan top of the blade is like half an inch below the top of the radiator core in the middle.
Perfect.
It sits off the radiator about a half an inch, three quarters of an inch. So it's nice and tight up in there. When you rev the engine, the motor mounts, you know, it moves a little bit, but nothing gets into the radiator.
Right.
So I thought, you know what? I'm going to drive this without a shroud. Let's just find out.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 92 degrees ambient. And I took it for a spin. And I actually took it through a fast food drive-through.
Nice.
With a notoriously long wait time.
Awesome.
And the temp gauge didn't care.
Good.
And you couldn't hear it at all. So it's unusual feeling. That I have a double win like that, but I did. So, and that's why I was asking, you know, what kind of fan you've got on yours. So I'm a big proponent of a good clutch fan. If you're not trying to eke out every last bit of horsepower.
Sure. And I'm not. I mean, this is a cruiser. It's a factory right. air car. Has, you know, soccer mom 293 gears in the back.
Yeah.
So it's I'm not going to be doing hole shots.
Right. And the other thing I think is interesting is the way the fan clutch works is there's like a silicone type fluid in there that mm-hmm. that changes its viscosity with temperature and binds up. So that's science. You know, that's going to work or it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to worry about, did I set the controller to the right temperature?
Mm.
Is
right.
Do the fan motors have enough electricity? Do they have the right relays? Is all the connections set? Which, again, when we're building, you know, a high-end car that needs to have full blast cooling at idle,
mm-hmm.
can't beat an electric fan. And true. If you've got a sophisticated ECM in the car, you know, you can control all that, no problem. Or that there's a couple companies now that make the pulse width modulated controller so the fan ramps up real nice.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm not bagging on electric fans by any sure. stretch. It's just for this particular application, it's
right.
they're kind of nice, cheap and easy.
Yes. Yes. That is nice. Yeah. That just got to feel good. You know, not hearing that sound, not hearing the fans screaming at you. and all that. Just makes it makes the ride feel a little more authentic, I think.
So in your case, the hood's going to be an interesting addition.
Yep.
Because that has the GTO. It's a mock hood scoop on that. It's not a functional.
It can be functional, but it's typically not.
Right. And I've seen them where people have opened that thing up. They took the pot metal trim off the front. Mm-hmm. And unless you do something custom in there that mimics that, they just don't look right.
Yeah. But you need to cut a piece of the hood, the hood frame needs to be cut right there. Yeah. And the grills need to be cut out. You have to have a tub to seal against the top of the hood as it comes down. And then it makes it a quote-unquote HO, a Ram Air car.
Right. So. Which I think we found doesn't really do much.
Probably not. It's not a great spot for a hood scoop because you have that boundary layer of air. Yeah. It's not really giving a real Ram Air effect.
Yeah, but what it would do is release heat.
Yes. Yes, it would.
You know, I tend to think of these things backwards, you know, because most people think a hood scoop, you're ramming air down in there into the engine. Our friend Nick Scavo put strain gauges and pressure gauges on the front of his race car once to measure what the air pressure is at speed to see if ram air was a thing.
Yeah.
And he put it, I think it was on the 92 Camaro body, where the front of the car was starting to form the wedge. So it's definitely in the air. You know, it's not in the dead spot like you're talking about.
Right.
At 198 miles an hour, take a guess on what the pressure was.
At the front end of the car?
Yeah. What do they measure additional to? It was one PSI.
One PSI?
One PSI, just shy of 200 miles an hour.
Oh, my gosh. That's terrible.
So, and I've heard this before where people are like, you know, I don't know the RPM, but when you get the engine revved up to, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 RPM, the vacuum of sucking the air in, the air speed is like 400 miles an hour.
Yeah, you're not overcoming that.
Correct. You're not ramming anything into that.
No, you're just getting fresh air in.
That's what you want to do. Yeah, yeah, you want to provide an opportunity for cool air that's not from underhood and fresh air. So the Ram Air thing, you know, it's a great name.
Oh, it's an awesome name. Are you kidding me? And the lettering on the cars that have the Ram Air name on them is really cool.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
But in your case, if you put the hood on the car and you find that, you know, you have some temperature issues, there would be an option to make that scoop functional and get some of that heat out.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, I mean, obviously it's apples to oranges now, but before when the car was running, when it was still a 400, it never got hot. It always ran 180, 190, even in
you
traffic.
You had the one Pontiac.
Yep.
That never got on.
Yep. Lucky me.
Yeah. Well, those cars, you know, I think it's pretty characteristic that either they're like yours and they were cool as cucumbers all the time, or you're always chasing something because they're always
running hot. I think the more people fuss around and get away from what the engineers did, they tend to run into more problems. Although we did have a 76 Le Mans Safari wagon with a 400 and it would get hot. It was completely stock, but the temperature light would come on when it was summertime. If my old man was driving kind of slow or he was idling, and then, you know, crank the heat on and, you know, roll the windows down to try to take some of that extra heat out through the heater core.
Yeah.
And then, you know, burn us alive.
Yeah, but that could have been a result of, on a Pontiac cooling system, you really have to blueprint those things.
Yeah.
And maybe that wagon, that the impeller distance on the back of the pump maybe could have been off by a couple hundred thou, and perhaps the you know, between the timing and the fan clutch, you know, everything could have been off just a touch.
Yeah,
and
it could have been.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. But yeah, so, but I think the more stock you keep those, I think the better you're going to be those cooling systems. Mm-hmm. But I do like having that aluminum radiator. That is nice. That does take a lot more heat out.
Mm-hmm. So I would, I'm going through your next visit. So the hood goes on. You maybe, are you going to do the wheel cylinders if they show up this week?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You want to make sure that stuff stops for mm-hmm. that hour long drive. So if you can get this thing on the road, and Randy, if I remember correctly, he's got a good length driveway, and then you mm-hmm. can take a left and you go like a quarter of a mile, and then there's another road that goes 5 or 6 miles. It
goes
way.
Forever. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe you can get out there and do a few laps.
Yeah. That's a good idea.
See, because you might find out that going down the road above 1500 RPM, it gets hot.
That's a good point. Yeah.
And it could be something silly that it doesn't do when it's idling in the driveway. Or at, you know, limp speed. Mm-hmm. So I would make sure that you simulate that drive as best you can.
It's a good idea.
Halfway home and go, oh no!
Randy! Come and get me!
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure you'll have some kind of contingency of a trailer or your buddy with the flatbed that towed it out there and took a sweet time.
Yeah, I do have AAA. Maybe I'll activate, get the same guy.
Activate the tracker this time on the phone.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Oh, my God, I was out of my mind.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. And then because the drive shaft was in the car, you don't necessarily think that's not a super priority at this point. It'll make it home with the...
Yes, it will make it home with it, yeah.
Drive shaft.
Oh, and by the way, the tachometer does work.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, we hooked it up last weekend.
Perfect.
Yeah.
So. That's cool. And you you've got a gauge panel on that under dash, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Volts, oil pressure, and water temp.
So how did pressure look and temperature?
Upon cold startup, I'm at right around 60, 65 pounds nice. At idle. Yeah, it's great. After it's fully heated up, I'm at about 25 or 30
nice.
Oil pressure at idle. So it's not
bad.
And
that was in park?
Yes.
Or in gear? Yeah.
In park.
So that'll come down just a touch when you put it in gear.
And yeah. Yeah, the RPM will drop about another 100 or so.
Yeah. But that's great.
Yeah, it's not bad.
No, that sounds really good.
Too shabby. Yeah.
What did you run for your initial oil?
Right now, it's Comp Cam's breaking oil that we have.
And that's a lightweight oil, and you're still putting out that kind of pressure number.
Yeah, so I'll probably run 10W40. I want to run a full synthetic. Maybe I'll call our buddies at PGH Racing Oil and use some of their stuff.
It will all of a sudden be a race car.
How about that?
It's the magic in that bottle.
Well, the ceramic sealer is for race cars, so it's I'm getting all kinds of race parts in this thing.
There you go. You're going to need an electric fan soon.
Pretty much, yeah, right?
You're going to free all that up.
So much high horsepower going on now.
That's it. So... Yeah, it'll be interesting to see the oil pressure, what it does when you change to the next oil. And so I fully am a believer of synthetics. But I also think that in the beginning on a new engine, you know, first you got to do your brake in time because, you know, they say some synthetics are too slippery and you don't brake the stuff in properly.
Right.
After that, no synthetic is easy on the wallet. There's no good cheap synthetic. So what I like to do, taking a nod from our buddy Paul, the actual engineer, he said you want to run the oil that is the lowest viscosity that still gives you good oil pressure at idle in gear when it's hot.
Okay.
And so to do some cocktailing, it's not cost effective to do it with synthetics.
Agreed.
But you could go buy... no name conventional oil and start with a 530 or something, just taking numbers out of the wind.
Right.
Run the car and go, yeah, that's too low. Dump it. Get something else.
Right.
You know, and understanding that the synthetic, even at the same viscosity rating, is probably going to be a little slipperier, you know.
Agreed. Sure.
And affect that. But I think, you know, it's kind of the concept of tuning the oil for the car.
Okay.
Right. The racers do it all the time. And that's, again, eking out that last bit of performance. But on a regular street car, you know, a lot of guys equate high pressure with healthy engines.
Mm-hmm.
But that can be really hard on that pump drive and on the cam yes. gear. And right. you, my friend, have a pretty pricey camshaft that you don't want to hurt that gear.
I do have a pretty pricey camshaft.
Right. Or the distributor gear coming off and grenading everything. So mm-hmm. I would try to find an engine oil that does what it needs to do as easy on the internals as possible.
I'm down with that. I am down with that.
I mean, at least it sounds good. But I did that on, I've done that on several cars, and it's kind of fun. It's like indexing right. spark plugs, you know? It's
just right.
Little extra things you can do. Yeah.
I hear ya.
So you'll get some miles on it with the oil that's in it. Sometimes those braking oils are like way too light to drive around on.
Uh-huh.
And you get like, you know, 5 pounds of oil ooh. Pressure, and it's like, ooh, I got to get this out. So it's good that you're there
mm-hmm.
on your simulated test lap home. I would just note what that oil pressure is hot after it's been stirred up
okay.
in gear and see that oil is okay to drive home on.
I see.
Right? Because if yeah. it starts to dip, you're going to want to put something a little more
robust.
Yeah, or, you know, you could always get the bottle of STP and dump that in there.
Yeah.
And I'm not kidding. That's really? Like, it's a very cost-effective way to add a lot of zinc and some, you know, molasses body to the oil. You know, I don't know if this is true, but it appears to be able to take a 1030 and make it a 40 by dumping STP in.
Oh, no kidding.
It does have a thickening quality. But at the same time, once it heats up, that kind of goes away too.
Mm.
But, you know, but an hour long is it's a good maiden voyage.
Yeah, I think so too.
And when I followed you, I mean, there's some highway driving.
Yeah.
And there's some kind of rural driving.
Yep.
So, if you need to pull over for a minute, it might not be in the best spot possible.
No, that's true. So, yeah, maybe some good shakedown runs are definitely in order before I commit to going home.
Right. The more you plan ahead, the less is going to happen.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, man.
So maybe this weekend it comes home. Your kids aren't even going to recognize that car.
No, they're not. They're not going to be used to seeing it not having stuff piled all over it is what they're not.
Well, yeah, it was at home until very recently when it got the engine put in. But, I mean, they're not going to see. Either one of them are not going to remember what it sounds like or
no.
smells like running.
Nope. No, it's been way cool. too long. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to being able to take them out in it. You know, we'll go for ice cream again, and this time not give the dog ice cream.
Who was it? Was it Chuck Winter who pointed that out?
Yeah, I think so.
On the Facebook page, just a little shout out. Somebody referenced the...
Yeah, he went in the way back machine for that one.
Don't give the dog ice cream.
What do I know?
Because... That was a funny story. It's another one you can dig up going back through previous episodes. We really need to get, maybe our friend Yardley, our official statistician, can write us some keyword summaries that would be searchable for some
right.
of these previous episodes. Because really, there's a description, but, you know, I write the descriptions, and it's mm-hmm. one paragraph that covers, it can't cover an hour, you know?
Right.
We need a stenographer to...
yes. Yardley. Yeah. Make it happen, buddy.
He was an English major.
Well, he's the right guy for the job then.
Yeah, I think he was just voluntold by Cuba.
Yes.
So that was going to be my next question. Do you have a, once it gets home and you get out and the adrenaline comes down and you walk around it 68 times and look underneath it and go in the house and come back out and smell if it's, does that smell like coolant or is that on fire? You know, because right. That's what you're going to do. And everything's cool. Is there a maiden voyage from home?
I don't have anything planned for a maiden voyage from home yet. I do have I do want to take on a few legs of the power tour with Jenny. We spoke about that a couple episodes ago.
Yeah, but that's down the road. I mean,
yeah, that's August, but I mean, maybe I don't have anything really concrete in mind. You know, maybe take it to our local cruise nights. Mm-hmm. Do something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, take my lady out in it and go do something.
My 70 Riv, after I bought the car, it had 24,900 miles on it,
mm-hmm.
but it still had 45 years on it.
Right.
So I had to fix brake lines and wheel cylinders and blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
So once I got that thing all figured out, where I live now, and at the time where I've lived the past 16 years, it's not where I grew up. And where I grew up, there was restaurants and hot dog joints. And,
yeah.
You know, I'll drop the name Portillo's is a good one to go to in the Chicago area. And those were like the maiden voyage, you know. We're going to go take it for a cruise, go eat something.
Right.
You know. Get a root beer, a milkshake, and come back. So where I'm at today, we don't have, you know, those specific places, but mm-hmm. a decent drive, half an hour, perhaps 20 minutes, is a White Castle. So that was my main.
Oh, nice.
Voyage. Went
nice.
Out to White Castle.
Very and, cool.
Yeah, it was. And that's a journey I got to take alone because my wife does not like White Castle.
Ah, dang.
Well, you or the After Effects.
You have a Sonic not far from you either, in I believe in Redbud.
We do in Waterloo, Illinois.
Waterloo,
but
okay.
But as I alluded before, you know, I grew up on real Chicago hot dogs.
Yeah, I understand.
The Vienna beef with, you know, right. all of the vegetable accoutrements.
Accoutrement. What the F is accoutrement?
Oh, that's right. That's right, Winnebago man.
Yeah.
Drag it through the garden. So when I go to the Sonic and they, for a while they were offering a Chicago style hot dog that had ketchup on it, which is a bozo no-no. And I'm like, really? I mean, I was about to just drop it on the floor in front of the person, but I'm not that much of a J.O., so.
How dare you, so, sir? How dare you?
Off to White Castle I was.
Nice, nice.
That's well, that'll be cool.
Taste of home.
Yeah, right. You know, it's mm-hmm. kind of close.
Yeah.
Although now, as I mentioned earlier, they're Portillo's restaurant. And if you're not familiar with that, I don't want to say a chain, but it was it started off in 1963, a guy named Dick Portillo opened up a hot dog stand, in a suburb of Chicago and eventually over 40 some years grew it into a giant empire of top-notch restaurants that had hot dogs and Italian beef sandwiches and pasta and burgers and, you know, what he called fine fast food, I think they call it.
Is that right? I never knew what it was called. It's not fast food.
It's not fast food, no. But it's similar. You know, it's like it's almost bar food, but you go in and get it and leave kind of thing.
Sure.
But, and it's a favorite. And they just opened one in Springfield, Illinois, which is about 100 miles from here.
That is a good Saturday afternoon drive right there, my friend.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's worth it.
You've got a clutch fan. You are ready to go.
Well, my neighbor Rick across the street, and he's hooked on this, and he's got a 67 Chevelle convertible. And we've already talked about, you know, we're going to head out at 9:30, 10 in the morning, take a nice cruise up to Springfield.
You know, right on.
Maybe tour the Capitol, wave to our our fine politicians in the state and give them the number one.
Number one, all of yes.
And then go get a beef from the Portillo's over by there.
Over by there in Springfield's.
That's right, and head back down. So
that is a great idea, dude. I love it.
Mm-hmm. So you got to think about, you know, your trip, because you got a Portillo's close to you.
Yeah, just a couple.
You got a lot of good food kind of around.
I got a lot of great stuff by me, yeah. Around, I do. Yeah. I'm lucky.
Yeah.
Got a White Castle. Got Portillo's. It's like almost next door to each other.
Yeah.
Not that I'm rubbing it in.
No, but what I thought was funny is when you grow up with stuff around you that you're used to, mm-hmm. and then you go somewhere else that is unfamiliar, mm. and you see a familiar thing, you gravitate to it.
Yeah.
Even though it's not like I went to White Castle every day.
Sure.
Growing up. If I lived where you are, that would be like choice number 15, you know, because there's so much better. I don't want to come across like I'm the champion for the castle, but right. it's just the, you know, a one constant that mm-hmm. was close enough. So
sure. Absolutely.
Because it is all about the experience.
It is. It is. Oh, I'm stoked that you're going to get to go to Portillo's.
Yeah, me too.
That's killer, man. You and Rick, that'll be awesome.
I don't have to order it in.
No. Nope.
Because they do that. They freeze and ship.
Mm. And that's not the same.
No. And our buddy Eric, you know, he brings another style of beef called Bari beef, which is in the Chicago area. Wonderful stuff. Really super good stuff. And he knows the owner of the company. And in fact, we have an annual party on Kelly's farm, and we do roast beef, and it comes from Bari.
Oh, really?
But when he brings it down here, that's not me cruising somewhere to get it. You know,
right?
You get the food side, but not the cruise.
Yeah, the cruise is part of the fun.
Starting to sound like Guy Fieri over here.
You go to Diners, Drive-ins, and Dives.
Yeah, with the D bag.
Nice.
Just because of the hair. I'm sure he's a great guy. Right. I've never met him. I should apologize for that.
Sorry, Guy. if you're listening, Guy, we apologize. Right.
If.
I mean, absolutely you're listening.
Of course.
He's a car guy. He would love this show.
He is. That 67 Camaro. Man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good stuff.
We had the twin to that car in our shop for a while.
Is that right?
Yeah, red. And actually, we've got one right now, a red 67 Camaro convertible, black gut, black top. It's like, it looks just like his car. Now, really? Now you bring that up, that it hit me. I've seen this car before. Yeah, it's just like that.
Nice.
Well, that'll be cool. And it's good that, you know, the family's on board, and they're probably excited about it.
Yes. Yeah, Jenny's really, she's been supporting me this whole way, and I can't thank her enough. She's been amazing. She knows what this means to me, and I know what it means to her, and it's just it's really cool. I mean, I almost can't believe it's actually happening. Like the day we started it up, I couldn't believe that it actually started, and the day I drove it, can't believe I actually drove it. Now I can't believe I'm actually going to bring this home.
That's right. Well, and so the after effects are, I bet your work week was a lot easier because your mood's better.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
You know, even if you're not focusing on the car while you're at work,
right?
I believe that, you know, when you got something exciting going on in your life, those chemical reactions or whatever they are hang in your body and make everything else a little more tolerable.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, I've been trying to take as many pictures and video as I can. And, you know, when I steal a moment away, I kind of check it out again. I'm like, oh, that's me driving it. That's cool.
Look, it does move. I didn't dream that.
It really moves.
Yeah. Well, and it does. It makes a big difference. And I, you know, heck, I work in a muscle car shop. But today was drive my RIV to work day. And it just sets up the day a little bit cooler. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a nicer deal.
Absolutely. Yeah, I can't wait to drive that GTO to work once in a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, people are already asking me. They're like, hey, you going to take that to work? I'm like, yeah, I'll take it to work. Darn right I will.
You're going to have a crowd around it?
Yeah.
In the parking line. People are going to be coming out to see it.
Mm-hmm. Whose car is that?
That's right.
That'd be mine.
That's the cue.
That's right.
don't mess.
Don't mess. Ah, man.
Yeah. Well, I was looking at the calendar today about Power Tour. And checking to see potential availability, because now if you're going, that would be cool to buzz along as well. So we'll see if we can make that happen.
Oh, right on. That'd be great.
Yeah. Now that this red ragtop of mine is doing as well as it is, it's time to go, you know, five states away and break it again.
Absolutely. Of course. That's hot rodding.
That's what this car does. Right on. All good stuff, man.
Indeed.
And on that note, my dial a trivia question, you know, people are really wondering about your answer. So
yeah,
why don't you go first?
Sure, you got it. All right, Kevin, I asked you what was the official name of the Chrysler Turbine car.
Oh, right. I got this wrong.
And you said Chrysler, insert existing Chrysler car name here, or the Jetosonic.
Yes.
Which is a strong name. Strong name.
It could be a good band, the Jetosonics.
Jetosonics. It should have been a band.
Dude.
But unfortunately, not the correct, not the right name. Great name, not the right name. Believe it or not, Kev, the official
name
of the Chrysler Turbine car was the Chrysler Turbine car. That's what it was called. Trick question.
That was a total setup.
It was. And I apologize. But I couldn't help it.
That's a good one. I deserve it. I'm good for it.
Yep.
The Chrysler Turbine car.
Yep.
It's like the Ohio State University.
Yeah, absolutely.
Chrysler Turbine car. Right. TOH.
Mm-hmm.
The is part of the name, right?
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah. All right. Well, my question to you was the Buick Electra 225. Why was it called the 225? And you said it was the number of inches long was the 225.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm kind of thinking, because you threw me that trick question, that that maybe I should get like granularly specific on this, because that's kind of correct for the most part. I believe it was over 225 inches long.
Oh, over 225.
Yes. Yeah. But I haven't measured one, so it could be. So I'm going to give it to you. That was good.
Right on. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was getting pressure from the crowd in the stands here. They said, give it to them. So.
Getting the glare.
Our live studio audience. Right. Right now, it consists of a couple of June bugs
yeah,
in the garage.
Same.
Yeah. All right. Well, way cool.
Indeed. Good stuff.
Yes. It is good stuff. And you know what's kind of fun is we've been touching on this on the GTO project for a while, and I'm trying to keep the show contextual to basically any car you might have.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's why I'm kind of hitting you with these little tech thoughts and questions along the way, because they apply to anybody, you know?
Absolutely.
Because somebody, I don't know who, but somebody might not like a GTO.
Well, I don't think I want them listening to this show.
Yeah. But, you know, in this case, there's plenty of information that works with whatever they like.
Yes.
And these are exciting times, because it is, you know, a long-term project. So we're next time I'm going to preview and say I want to hear the driving story. I want to hear where you go and how it does.
Okay.
But the fun thing is, because we've been talking about the GTO for a couple episodes now, we're stockpiling some good additional topics.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up, there's so much going on in the V8 Speed and Resto shop. There's so many cool cars in progress and new ones coming in. Events are back. You know, my travel calendar is like jammed, so
nice.
There is a ton to do, and I'm excited about it. So last time we talked about the concept of try and do it now while you can, because, you know, in a blink of an eye, 7 years can go by. yeah, right. Well, you know, and again, it's not a dig, it's a reality. Yeah. So I'm trying to do stuff instead of looking at my Galaxy saying, yeah, that electric fan's annoying, but you know, I actually did something about it. And I got a little laundry list of a few other things, you know, because the sooner you get it done, the more you can enjoy it, and then everything's better. So that, yes, that's my recommendation.
Good. Couldn't agree more.
Yeah. And coming up with some of these additional topics on this show, we've got a lot of that kind of theme of getting it done. So
good.
Right on. All right, my man.
All right.
This is a good one. I'm excited for you.
Thank you. I am beyond stoked that I'm at this point with this project.
Yeah.
So, although it'll never be done, it's going to be done enough to drive and enjoy and you know, put it out there. So.
So maybe next time, between now and our next episode, it might be kind of fun to come up with the list of acknowledgments and shout outs. To people that gave you a hand along the way, and you can read those on the air.
Absolutely. Would love to.
Right on.
Yep.
All right, my friend. Well, it's been fun.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much all I got right now, because I need you to go drive the car and get a good burger, get a good dog, get a good beef.
Yeah, man. Heck, maybe I'll drive down to Springfield with you and meet up with you guys.
Nah, let me know. Maybe that make your second drive, you know, after, because that's that's probably 150 miles.
3 hours from my place, I think.
Yeah. That's a good trial run for the power tour.
Oh, yeah. I got to make sure it's going to hold together, right?
That's it. Oh. Look at that. A plan has been hatched.
Oh, that's it.
That's it. And that's all we got to say. I'm Kevin Oostie, joined by Mr. Mike Hubal Clark on the latest episode of V8 Radio, to which we say, that's it. Keep the shiny side up. See you next time.